The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
BBC WM
95.6.
Hello, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. Danny Kelly is bunking off for one day. He's back tomorrow, so bear with me. Lots coming up in the next 2 hours of the show, including how safe do you feel as a cyclist on the roads? We're hearing more and more stories, aren't we, every week of terrible accidents happening. Do you feel safe as a cyclist? Or if you're a car driver, would you rather see cyclists off the road? Terrible story. I'll be talking to a mum a bit later on in the show who lost her daughter in a tragic accident. Oh, 84530 9956. There are a lot of new Christmas scams coming up. We'll give you the heads up on what they are. If you or a friend of yours has ever been caught out with scams, you can get in touch. 81333. Start your text WM. And how much are you going to spend on your kids at Christmas?
Have your say.
Call 84530 9956.
BBC WM
95.6.
Now, in fairness, I got a little bit carried away. When I was trailing the show, I said the average spend on kids at Christmas is £900. That's wrong. It's what kids want you to spend at Christmas. The average Christmas list that a child draws up is £900. You'll be lucky, sunshine. Oh, you'll be lucky. Well, on average, we spend about just over 200 quid on our kids. Well, how much are you planning to spend on your children this Christmas? And I don't want to use that hackneyed, have we lost the meaning of Christmas? But really, have we? I've told all of my friends and family, one present per... I've got two boys. One present per boy this year, please. Because we always get too much, and half of it doesn't even get played with. So, are you dreading Christmas in terms of the amount you're going to spend? And how much are you planning on spending on your kids at Christmas? 08453 009956. And do you think that perhaps we spend too much money at Christmas? This is Ian Lee sitting in for Danny Kelly. 08453 009956. I'll speak to you after a bit of this. Afternoon, what are we? About 9 minutes past two. It's Wednesday. This is Ian Lee on BBC WM 95.6. Boom. Filling in for Danny Kelly. He's back tomorrow. Don't panic. But if Danny were here, I know he would like lots of phone calls and texts and emails. So please do get in touch. If you want to email me during the next 2 hours, it's ian.lee, ian.lee at bbc.co.uk. Now, have your kids done their Christmas list for Father Christmas yet? If not, time is running out. Is it Sunday? I think Sunday is the 1st of December. Wow. Lists have got to be sent to the big man in Lapland ASAP. You don't want to mess this up. But apparently the average Christmas list now adds up to a staggering £900. What are they thinking? I'm guessing half of that would be the new Xbox, which I think is 450 quid or something like that. And there's the PS4 and iPad. Furbies are back in. Average list adding up to £900. In reality, the child will have £207 actually spent on them by Santa, of course. Who else? Huh? Meaning there's probably going to be quite a few tears on Christmas Day. So are we spoiling our kids? It's easily done, isn't it? As a dad myself, on Christmas, you want to make it special. You want them to be happy. So we think that happiness is done by buying things. Has it all gone too far? And I guess a side aspect of this is, are you worried about paying for Christmas? More and more people will be going to payday loan companies and loan sharks to cover their Christmas. 08453 009956. Parents, grandparents, give me a call and let me know what your thoughts are on this. Well, one person who thinks that the £207 per kid is far too much money to spend on a child is parenting journalist and the author of Raising Children, The Primary Years. It's Liat Hughes-Joshi. Good morning. Good afternoon, Liat.
Hi.
£207 per kid. Is that really too much, or is that just parents being generous and loving?
Well, even if it's good intentions, you know, it is an awful lot to spend on children. And to me, it just seems pretty crazy to be spending so much money when so many people are struggling financially these days. I mean, there's a news story today about how 9 million people in the UK are in debt, and I just cannot see that you have to spend £207 per child as well to make Christmas happy.
What are you suggesting then, Leah, that we kind of all make things out of bits of cardboard and give them to our kids? Because they would be heartbroken, wouldn't they? They're expecting a PS4 and they get, like a dolly made out of straw that Mum's made.
It would be a really, really rubbish dolly if I made it.
Yes,
I can tell you that. My son would not be happy with that. No, of course I'm not suggesting that we don't buy them anything, but I do think it's all got a little bit out of hand.
Mm.
And, on the one hand, yes, we hear that they come home and they say that everyone else in the class is getting a PS4 or the latest Xbox, which actually often won't really be true, but, that's the way kids work. They come home and say, everybody's getting one. It's hard to say no to that. But really, if you can't afford it easily, it's just so difficult to say. It is difficult to say no, but it's the right thing. And also, we've got to think long-term for our children. If we give them everything they want on a plate now, we're not really preparing them for real life, and we're not teaching them the value of money.
Yeah, you said you've got a little boy. How old is he?
He's 8.
And how much do you spend on him for Christmas? What's your plan for this year?
Yeah, I typically spend about £50, £60, or £70, just depending on what what he's after. He's at that age now where they are starting to swap notes in the playground, but I don't think yet we're at the full-blown peer pressure stage. And
yeah.
I do think it is going to get much harder when he hits the teenage years.
And is he disappointed when he comes down on Christmas morning and sees what he's got, or rather what he's not got?
No, absolutely not. I mean, at the end of the day, 8-year-olds aren't sitting there totting up the exact value of what they've got on Christmas morning. Or if they are, I'd be a little bit worried about them and the messages they're getting from those around them, to be honest. You know, most primary school age children would have a preference about what they want for Christmas, but it won't necessarily be the most expensive thing out there. You know, some of them will just want the latest book by their favorite author, or one Xbox game which might cost, say, £40, but they're not necessarily sitting there saying I want £207 of stuff, and if I don't get it, you're a bad parent. Not like that.
It's always been that way, hasn't it? My favourite game when I was about 7 or 8, from the mid-November onwards, was to sit with the Argos catalogue.
Yeah.
And me and my sister, we'd flick to the back sort of 30 pages, which was all the toys, and we'd go, right, I want that, I want that, I want that. So it's always been kids, it's not a new phenomenon, is it, kids, for kids to aspire to things like that?
Yeah, and it's natural, it's the way of the world, I get that, but what I think we need to do as parents is make sure it's kept to a reasonable level, so that we're not getting ourselves into debt, or spending more than we're comfortable with, and equally that we're not spoiling our children and leading them into a level of expectation that's probably not going to be sustainable when they're in their 20s and they're out there on their own, and they're perhaps struggling to buy their boyfriend or girlfriend something that lives up to what they've always got when they were kids.
I think what you're saying makes sense, is that we have a chance here as parents the next future generations to kind of destroy, or at least get rid of, part of this culture of living in debt and buying things that we can't really afford, but we can pay them off in a few months' time.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can destroy it, because there's bigger issues influence, but we can influence it, and we can influence our own children's view of money, and we can teach them that actually sometimes you have to save for things. And actually, when you and I sat down and had the Argos catalogue in front of us, chances are our parents would say, well, look, you've only got this much to spend, and if you can't afford it, save up your pocket money, or you can put your birthday and Christmas money together and buy that slightly more expensive item, not just handing it to them. And there's loads we can do as parents to help with that. A great thing now as Christmas approaches, get them to clear out quite a lot of the old stuff that they're not using anymore, the toys they've outgrown, and do a boot sale or eBay it. You can get them working towards buying something a little bit more expensive if that's what they truly want.
Leah Hughes-Joshi, thank you very much. Parenting journalist, author of Raising Children, The Primary Years. Right, what do you think? You're a parent, you're a grandparent, you were a kid once, you've been through this in one form or another. Is Leah being responsible? She'll spend 50 quid on her 8-year-old boy. Or is she being a little bit tight and a bit of a scroot? It's Christmas, for goodness sakes. The key got kids, they're 6, 7, 8 years old. You want to spoil them. It only happens once. So what if I have to go to Wonga or another payday loan company and take out a bit of extra money? It doesn't matter. 08453 009956. How much are you spending on your kids for Christmas? And are you prepared to go into debt for it? 08453 009956. You can send me a text, 81333. Start your text WM. Or you can send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. So give me a call. It's kind of my first Christmas with both boys being fully aware of what is going on. They'll be 4 and 2 in January. So they are... they're aware of Father Christmas, the oldest one in particular. They know that presents are involved. I could do with your tips on this, how I'm going to get through it without it costing an arm and a leg. 08453 009956. Another thing that pops up over Christmas, well, there's lots of scams. Cyber criminals seem to take advantage of people. These financial predators use the festive period to lure their suspecting victims. From shipping notification scams to seasonal travel scams. With more and more people online at Christmas, they see it as the perfect time of year to tuck into your bank account. We're being warned at the moment of the 12 scams of Christmas. Now, have you ever been a victim of a scam? I'm always amazed when people, and lots of people have been, otherwise these scams wouldn't happen. If people didn't fall for them, then the scams wouldn't happen. But I always think, oh, I'd never get caught out by that. Oh, I'd never get caught out by that. But you just don't know, do you? 08453 009956. If you or someone you know has been caught out by a scam, to tell us more about the 12 scams of Christmas, a specialist in online protection is Samantha Swift from McAfee. Good afternoon, Samantha.
Hi there.
McAfee or McAfee? How are you saying that these
McAfee.
Days? There we go. You see, I knew I'd get it wrong. Now, Sam, give us a few examples of what we need to be looking out for this Christmas.
Okay. One of the big items that we see, you know, all of us are... compiling currently our Christmas list, getting involved with our Christmas shopping. You know, many of us have children that want the latest console or, you know, the newest toy. Very common that we see through social media, email and the web, some almost too good to be true hot holiday gift scams. So these are advertisements which promise these big ticket items for heavily reduced prices. And unfortunately, if it seems too good to be true, generally it is.
Now, you and I know that, but there are vulnerable people out there. And I don't want to say it's always the elderly, but I would imagine that they're a big percentage of the people that fall for these that do think, oh, look, we're being offered a trip to America. All we have to do is just email back with our bank details.
Unfortunately so, and it's very easy to get caught up by these scams. We see now that the websites, the emails look much more professional than they used to years ago. You used to be able to spot them very simply. There'd be spelling mistakes. They wouldn't look genuine. But now the cyber criminals have gone to great lengths to try and defraud people of their credit card information and their personal details.
Am I right in thinking that most of these scams originate from abroad? So there's not a lot the authorities in this country can do, is there?
It's a global issue, unfortunately. So whilst the authorities are doing some great things to try and combat these types of threats, it's very difficult as we go across borders to be able to, you know, to deal with these things and really put a stop to it.
Give us the sort of top two or three most popular scams out there at the moment.
So, as we are, you know, a lot of us are using the web to do our shopping and, you know, not to have to battle with the high street, because due to that, we'll be expecting, you know, delivery notifications coming through. So we see this a lot, where you get an email that says, you know, regarding your delivery, please click here for more information, or please open this attachment for details. And, you know, you click through and it takes you to a malicious website. You've got viruses coming down to your machine and, you know, they're looking to try and steal your data and your financial information.
And is there anything we can do to guard against these kind of things?
Yeah, well, it's very important that we have cross-device coverage. And what I mean by that is many of us are used to having protection on our laptops, on our PCs, but more and more of us now are using mobile devices and tablets to do our Christmas shopping. It's estimated that 12% of the online sales during the Christmas period will be done through mobile devices. So having that coverage across all of your devices and keeping it up to date is very important.
Samantha Swift, I appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you very much indeed. It is one of those things. You always say, well, I would never get caught. I'd never get caught out by a scam. Not me. But loads of people do. And I think I had an email the other day that did look genuine, and I clicked on it. And as soon as I clicked on it, I thought, oh, no, hang on a second. This is not who it's purporting to be. And I kind of got out of it and didn't go any further. But if you're not paying attention and you've ordered something from an online delivery company and then you get an email from what appears to be them the next day, you might click on it and follow it through. Give me a call. I won't. If you've been caught out by a scam, I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to point at you going, what on earth were you thinking? I want to hear your stories this afternoon on this. Have you or someone you know been caught out by a scam? There's a great new scam that's going on at the moment where they phone up people and they say, oh, is that Mrs. Jones? Yes. Ah, well, we're from the bank and your card's been stolen. What I need you to do is put the phone down, pick it up and dial the police. And then they'll give you some information. So Mrs. Jones puts the phone down, picks the phone up, dials what she thinks is the police, but the fella on the other end of the line hasn't put his phone down, so he's still talking to her. And loads of people have been caught by that. If you've been caught by a scam or someone you know, could you give us a call? Let us know. Warn other people so that they can avoid it. 08453 009956. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Danny Kelly on BBC WM 95.6. And maybe I'll speak to you after this. Afternoon. This is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6, sitting in for Danny Kelly. He's back tomorrow. Don't panic, don't panic, don't panic. A little bit of travel news for you before we go to the travel. Roads are quite busy in Sutton Coldfield. There is an incident going on. We don't have many details. When we do, we'll let you know, but just it's a little bit busy around there at the moment. This is Ian Lee. You can give me a call today. 08453 009956 is the phone number. We're talking about Christmas. How much are you going to spend? Christmas scams. Scams in general. If you've been caught out by a scam, do give us a call and let me know and share it with the listeners, because people do fall for these things. 08453 009956. Coming up in the next sort of 10 minutes or so of the show, a really sad story about a mum who lost her little girl in a road accident. Little girl was riding a bicycle and there's a terrible accident and the poor girl passed away. We'll be talking about that. But I was wondering, would you feel safe riding bicycles? Riding a bicycle on the towns and cities of Great Britain? I don't know if I would. I've got a bike. Every now and then when I'm kind of on a health kick, I'll pop out and I'll have a go on it. But I don't know if I would. Do you feel safe? Would you feel safe riding a bicycle on the towns and the cities and the roads of Great Britain? 08453 009956.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. BBC WM 95.6.
08453 009956. Are you a cyclist? Do you feel safe riding a bicycle on the roads and the streets of Britain? I don't know if I would. I don't think I would in a big town or a city. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. 08453 009956. But before we get to that, let's go to Chris. Afternoon, Chris.
Yeah, hi, Ian.
Chris, have you been caught out by one of these scams?
I received a email about this time last year from PayPal, allegedly PayPal, asking me to confirm my security details and card details. So this is something that I would say to your listeners to be very, very careful about this time of year. Now, the email basically said, we've received a security breach on your account. Can you please confirm your password and card details?
Yeah.
To confirm that this is you who has obviously breached security. Right, now, I did think it was me because about 2 weeks prior to this, I'd actually entered the wrong password. So I waited about, I don't know, a week or so, and then...
So you actually clicked on it, Chris, sorry, and you followed the instructions?
I followed the instructions. Ouch. And it was just like PayPal.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly the same, the logo, the whole lot,
dear.
Right? I mean, it was just a perfect carbon copy of the PayPal website.
Yeah.
And anyway, I contacted PayPal when I received my credit card, because I waited about a week, and I thought, you know, what happened was I wasn't able to use my card, and then I checked it, and then I contacted PayPal, and they said, no, it's nothing to do with us.
Oh, man.
We'd never ask you to hand over that information. So you know, just be very careful.
So, what, Chris, what happened? Did they get any money out of you? What was the result?
Yeah, they maxed my card out to £1,500.
Oh, I'm assuming you got that back.
I did, actually.
But yeah, it still hurts, though, doesn't it? And it takes a while.
It took me about the best part of 3 months.
Chris, listen, thank you very much indeed. Now, Chris sounds like a sensible fella, doesn't he? Doesn't he? He sounds like a normal, sensible bloke. He fell for it. These companies, your banks and your PayPals, which is a completely above-board legit business, your Amazons, they won't email you like this. They won't email you asking you for your password and your details. So don't. If you click on it, it's a fake. 08453-009956. Vera's in Harborne. Good afternoon, Vera.
Hello, good afternoon.
What have you called in for?
I wanted to talk about the vast amount of money that is spent on children at Christmas. Now, we don't have Christmas because I'm Jewish and we have a festival which starts tonight, actually, called Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, yes, of course.
Thank you. Well, we light one candle today and one other one till we've got 8 candles, and then the children during the Hanukkah days get presents.
Yes.
Now, I have lots of children. We have lots of grandchildren and great-grandchildren, but in particular, 2 grandchildren in Cornwall. One is a girl of nearly 8, and one is a girl of nearly 5. Now, a little while ago, they bought out of their own pocket money some dolls, a doll each.
Yes.
Now then, for this Hanukkah, my husband and I, and we're not a Scrooge, and we're not stingy.
No.
For the Hanukkah, they are going to get book tokens.
What?
They are going to have those golden chocolate pennies that you find in the shops.
Yep, always a winner.
And I'm going, yes, it is. And I've told their father he's not to eat them all.
Yes. Oh.
And I'm sitting here, well, not sitting here at the moment, but I'm knitting, sewing, and crocheting dolly's clothes for their dolls. They're going to be absolutely thrilled to bits.
Yeah.
And they're going to be happy with that.
Do you, now Vera, do you, listen, it sounds lovely, and I wish my grandmothers were still here to knit clothes for my teddy bears and stuff. Sadly, they're not. But do you think genuinely they're going to be thrilled by that?
Yes.
Or do you think they'll really be wanting FIFA 14 on the Xbox One?
No.
Bit of Call of Duty?
No, they're not sort of
Grand Theft Auto
that with it. They're going to be happy with book tokens. They're going to be happy with their chocolate coins. They're going to be happy with dollies, knickers, dresses, jumpers and skirts. And that's from the grandparents.
Vera, listen, it's a lovely thing. And yes, if they're happy with, I think she said dollies, knickers. I think she did say that. I don't know if we're allowed to say that on BBCWM. I'm getting a kind of wavy hand that means maybe. Vera, listen, it sounds wonderful. As a 40-year-old man, I could totally appreciate that. Oh, I wish my grandmother was still here to make toys, make clothes for my toys. Sadly, she's not. But will an 8-year-old really be happy with that? I mean, yes, they'll say they're happy, but will they be really? 08453-009956. Talking about scams, it's Terry in King's Heath. Afternoon, Terry. Have you been caught out by one of these scams?
I have. It was about 6 months ago.
Go on, what happened?
I received an email. I work from home quite a bit, and I received an email from my boss, or so it said from the boss. It was my boss's name.
Yeah.
And then it said, at the administrator. So I didn't think twice about just clicking it straight away. And I opened it up, and it's something about file sharing, so I started to get a little bit suspicious. And then all of a sudden, all hell let loose, and I started to get these messages popping up on the screen saying that some sort of device was trying to get more credit card details and bank details from the machine.
Oh dear.
We can stop it now.
Oh,
send
right.
us your credit card details and we'll stop it immediately. And then it just kept banging on saying it's still working on, it's nearly got your bank account details out. But obviously I never done anything. I spoke to my boss and there's a guy who looks after our computers, and he I spoke to him. He said,
"The thing is, Terry, what these scammers can do with computers is incredible. They can turn on your webcam and watch what you're up to."
Oh God, blimey!
I know exactly. So, right, this is why I'm now one of the many reasons I'm always wearing clothes. Nearly always wearing clothes when I'm sat on the computer. They can turn on your camera, look at you. They can notice everything that you're typing into the keyboards. Nothing is safe anymore, Terry.
It's absolutely strange, Ian, but, you know, it's just one of those scams. You just got to beware of everything, just double-check everything twice.
Double-check everything twice, Terry. Sensible advice. Thank you very much. 08453 009956. A wide mix of stuff this afternoon, which is what makes this so much fun, I think. Christmas, how much are you going to spend on the kids? Have you been caught out by a scam? And in a few minutes, do you feel safe riding a bicycle? Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. If you want to take part in the debate today, you can give me a call, 08453 009956. Now, here's a story that, it's very sad, I think. On the 7th of November 2011, Birmingham teenager Hope Fennell, aged just 13, was struck and killed by an 18-ton lorry as she pushed her bike across a pedestrian crossing in King's Heath. The driver high up in his cab, didn't see, didn't hear and didn't feel the collision. Kept on driving with Hope trapped beneath his lorry until passers-by jumped in front to alert the driver. Hope died trapped under the lorry despite desperate attempts to free her. Terrible, terrible story. Well, since then, Hope's mum, Nazan, has been campaigning for safer roads. And on Friday, she plans to take her plight to London and protest Parliament. She says she wants the UK to be as cycle-friendly as Holland. Well, Nazan joins me on the line now. Good afternoon, Nazan. Thanks very much for joining me. Tell me about Hope. What kind of girl was she?
Hope, she was just beautiful. Beautiful, funny, intelligent, you know, very lively, really friendly, looking after people at school, you know, very compassionate person, looking after children who are in need, and just a lovely personality, really. She brought a lot of joy and happiness into our lives and into our family.
And did she use her bike a lot?
She loved her bike. She did use her bike, but not on the road. She was kind of a slow rider, so I did say to her, you know, keep to the pavements, but do use the crossings, you know, carefully. And she was a very careful road user. She was brought up to be a very careful road user.
Now, Nazan, if I ask anything that's too personal, but please do tell me just to back down a little bit. But if you don't mind, can you tell me what happened on that terrible day and how you found out?
Yes, of course. When you say what happened, is it what happened?
Well, how did you realise that something had happened to your daughter?
Okay. Well, I was preparing the children's dinner. I have two other children, so Hope has two siblings. The other two were home, and I was cooking their dinner after work. I've kind of just come back from work and went straight into the kitchen like you do and start cooking their dinner. Hope was just a little bit late from school, but I wasn't worried because she's only just 13 and she was absolutely buzzing about everything, you know,
yes.
Everything. So I thought she might have just popped in because we live by a busy shopping centre, a busy street, A435, King's Heath High Street. I wasn't worried. I thought she probably popped into Boots again to buy herself another lipstick, although she had, you know, lip gloss or something like young girls do at that age.
Mm.
But then it was kind of 6 o'clock, 6:20 past 6, which is quite late for her, you know. And the knock came on the door, you know, that dreadful knock. I didn't suspect anything at all. I just opened and welcomed two police officers, offered them a cup of tea, asked them to sit down. You know, they looked really grim, really quite stressed, really. They just said to me, there are no easy ways of saying this to Miss Fennell. But first they asked about Hope and if she's my child, and, you know, they were just confirming the address. And then they told me that Hope was killed in a road traffic collision on the high street, coming back from school.
Every parent's nightmare, isn't it?
It's just the worst thing that, you know, you can't even bring yourself to think about it. It's just so heartbreaking that you can't even imagine it.
Do you remember how you felt when they said that?
Yeah, I did. I actually felt like I am just walking through my worst nightmare, and I was thinking, I'm going to wake up in a minute. You know, when you get these really bad dreams and you just kind of wake up and catch your breath. I just could not, you know, it could just not be true. So I actually remember running around saying to them, you know, sit down. This is you're making a mistake. Let's just sort this out. You know, I was getting like Hope's pictures and showing them that she was very young, very healthy, very beautiful, that she couldn't possibly be dead, you know.
Honest, Anne, I'm so sorry. It really is just, you know, I've got two boys, and it is just, you know, hearing of a parent losing a child like that, it's very, very sad. How have the last couple of years been?
It's been incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult because, you know, obviously I have suffered quite a lot with grief and basically I've suffered with trauma quite a lot, traumatic. The fact that Hope, you know, she wasn't just dead, but she died a sudden, traumatic and public, you know, a violent death, if you like, and in public, because as you just mentioned, people actually jumped in front of the lorry to alert the lorry driver that there was a child and a pushbike under him. And he still didn't, you know, he was still wondering what was going on, why they were stopping him. So it's not just that she was killed, but she was trapped. I've heard, they said to me, you know, and they said the word trapped. That kind of traumatized me, that one word. Because the problem with the investigations and all that, you know, because it's a road collision, the family of the loved one who we lose on the road, you know, not really entitled to much information. So you've been told your child has died, and you can't know anything else. You know, you ask questions and they can't tell you because there's an investigation ongoing. So for 2 years, I have imagined 101 different scenarios how she might have died. Was it quick? You know, did she suffer? You know, you do imagine all sorts of things. Sure, and that is a very difficult thing to cope with as a mother.
You're campaigning, aren't you, for changes in the UK regarding road safety as a result of what happened to Hope. What changes would you like to see?
What changes I would like to see? Well, the reason why I'm running this campaign is because when I looked into the collusion and asked, you know, I kept asking questions about what happened, why it happened, where was she, where was the truck, what was the light, you know, where was other people, and I kind of carefully looked at the situation on the high street, and I also looked at the history of the high street, A435, and realized that there was an established pattern of death. Collisions mostly involved heavy goods vehicles and the vulnerable on the high street. Vulnerable road users are obviously children, the elderly, and the cyclists. For the obvious reasons, you know, the elderly cannot really hear and react as fast as we can. So if you know, there has been two elderly people before Hope, my daughter, on the high street. They died horrific deaths. You know, that's one of the things about these collisions with lorries. They've got massive blind spots. That's one of the things that I realised when I was looking into it, how this has happened. And I've been told, you know, you basically all you get told is he couldn't see her. It's just simple as that. And I kind of didn't find that enough of an explanation. So I looked into it quite a lot and realised that we've got an issue with the blind spots with the lorries, especially if they enter urban areas. So if you, you know, if you, the A435, for the people who know what this road is like, King Seat High Street, it's very heavily populated with traffic. And
not very wide either.
And also with school children. About 5,000 school children used the crossing where Hope got.
It's very narrow there as well. Nazan, just stay there for a second. So I've got another guest joining us as well. It's MP Ian Austin, who's been campaigning for years about road safety when it comes to cyclists. Ian, this morning you were chairing a summit in London, is that right?
That's right, yeah. It's a summit on cycle safety in London. I think Mrs. Fennell's story is horrendous, heartrending. As you said, it's every parent's nightmare. And tragically, it's an all too common.
Well, we're hearing more and more about it, aren't we?
Well, there have been, you know, 14 recent fatalities on London's roads, and nine out of those 14 have involved HGVs. HGVs account for 5% of traffic, but are responsible for 2/3 of fatalities. So there's clearly an issue, and it's clearly got to be looked at, as Mrs. Fennell says.
Ian, is there a solution? Because lots of people would argue that Britain isn't particularly cycle-friendly, and that to make it more friendly for bicycles, it would just take such a huge spend that some might argue, and this is going to sound really disrespectful after what we've just heard, but I'm just putting this point across, some might argue that investment isn't worth it.
I don't accept that at all. And I think there are things that... you know, that can be done that are... I mean, look, it costs less than £3,000 to equip a lorry with the sensors, mirrors, alarms and safety bars that would protect cyclists and alert drivers to the fact that there's a cyclist there. We spend billions of pounds on Britain's roads network, but a tiny amount of money on measures for cycling and pedestrians. I'm not naive about this. I know the government's not going to spend a huge amount more money, but why can't they take a tiny bit of that money, the billions of pounds for the roads, and spend it on cycle lanes, sorting out dangerous junctions, sorting out the dangerous roads of the sort that Mrs. Fennell's talked about, and making things safer for cyclists? Why can't the lorry industry? Why? I mean, if you think about the way these lorries are designed, with the drivers miles up in the air. If you think about the difference between a bus and a lorry, where the bus driver is actually low down, surrounded by glass, clear visibility, but lorry drivers are 10 feet in the air and can't see a thing. So I think all these things have got to be looked at. I think there are things that can be done, you know, relatively cheaply. I think the other thing as well is there's got to be a proper review of the way the criminal justice system deals with this. Mrs. Fennell did mention, but I think I'm right in saying, that the driver who... you know, was responsible for her daughter's death. He was texting his girlfriend before this incident.
Oh, dear, really?
Right? And he got 3 months in prison. Now, I think all too often these cases are not investigated properly. They're not then prosecuted properly. I don't think the CPS take, you know... prosecute drivers on the most serious charges, I've witnessed accidents involving, well, not accidents actually, I've witnessed incidents in which cyclists have been really seriously hurt, and the police have done actually pretty much
very
nothing
little.
About
Ian, just
it.
Stay there very quickly, just because Aidan has called in from Sutton Coldfield. Good afternoon, Aidan. You are a lorry driver. What do you think about what you're hearing? Turn your radio off. Aidan, turn your radio off.
I haven't got the radio on.
What's that noise in the background?
Hold on a second.
There we go, you see, this is the, Aidan, any good?
How's that?
Okay, that's better, go on. What's your point, very quickly?
The biggest problem I find with cyclists, especially this time of year, is they're not very well lit. They wear dark clothes, no illegal lighting, all the rest of it. It's because it's all very well having all these safety things fitted to car vehicles, but you still need to be able to see the cyclists when you're driving down the road.
But you're not saying that these accidents we've heard about recently are the cyclists' fault, are you?
It could possibly be the cyclist's fault. I mean, I had one this morning, 6 o'clock this morning, no lights on it, no lights, dark clothes, dark road, short, virtually 3 or 4 feet out from the curb. I mean, what chance do you get to, like... avoiding people like that.
Aidan, listen, thank you very much. We've got to end it there. Ian Austin, MP, thank you very much. Aidan and Nazan, thank you so much for telling us the story about Hope, and I really hope that your campaign is successful. Let's throw this out and let's kind of move away from Hope and Nazan slightly, because it's a slightly different incident. Two sides there. It's kind of lorry drivers versus cyclists. Whose side are you on when it comes to safety on the roads? 08453 009956. There you go. That's them there, Four Tops. If you want to meet meet Nazan and the team, then you can do Friday, I think it is, New Street at 1 p.m. Thank you so much for telling us your story. Incredible story. Do give me a call and let's move it ever so slightly away from the situation with Hope if we can. It's cyclists versus lorries. 08453 009956. Whose side are you on when it comes to safety on the roads? Ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. 81333. Start your text WM.
The Voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. BBC WM.
95.6.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM, sitting in for Danny Kelly. What a powerful first hour. We've all just been discussing the story we heard about Hope, the 13-year-old girl. If you want to give us your calls, not specifically on that, but on cyclists and lorries, are Britain's roads safe for cyclists? And who are the worst drivers? Is it cyclists? Is it lorry drivers? 08453 009956. In this hour, there's a big hunt. Someone's won millions of pounds on the lottery. They've just not claimed it. Is it you? What was it like when you first moved in with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, your partner, as they call it these days? Ooh, a horrible word. It's weird, isn't it? It's all lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey. Then hang on a second, you do that with the toilet? You leave your toothbrush there? You leave the toilet door open when you go? Oh, dear, I want to hear your stories, good and bad, about when you first moved in with your girlfriend. And also, I know the last 20 minutes was hard, but we've got an incredible story about what happened to someone after another road accident. 08453 009956.
Have your say.
Call 08453 009956.
BBC WM
95.6.
Can I just say, I know when you listen to your favourite presenter, and I know Danny Kelly's very popular with lots of you, and somebody else sits in for them. I'm the same. I'm a radio fan. You go, oh, who's this? Who's this Muppet? Where's Danny gone? You are being very, very kind and generous to me this afternoon. Lots of phone calls, lots of texts coming in, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much indeed. If you want to take part in the show, 08453 009956. We're going to hear an incredible story in a few minutes. There are some real scum out there. I'm going to tell you a story about some real lowlife after this. Afternoon, Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6, here until 4 o'clock, and then Paul Franks takes over. Lots to talk about. What have we talked about so far? We've talked about the expense of Christmas. How much are you going to spend on the kids and the grandkids? We've talked about scams. We've talked about cycling on the roads, and is it safe? 08453 009956, if you want to give us a call and talk about any of those things. I want to hear from you your stories of when you first moved in with your boyfriend or your girlfriend. What was it like? It's a big step, isn't it? Particularly if you've been living on your own, to then invite somebody to move in with you. It's a big step, and you think about it. It never quite works out the way you expect it to, does it? There are always... Well, everybody's got bad habits, even the people that we love the most, particularly people that we love the most, got bad habits, and you don't really notice them until you're living with them, until you spot that they do like to keep their dirty grundies on the floor. They do like to leave the toilet door open when they're going to the bathroom. They do kind of just walk around the house naked. What happened to you when you moved in? What bad habits did you pick up? Was it a nightmare? Did you fall out? 08453 009956. The reason I'm talking about this is because the number of couples moving in together has dramatically increased from 2.2 million in 2003 to 2.9 million in 2013. And a third of us think moving in together is a sure sign of commitment. Used to be called living in sin. Used to be called living in sin, you mucky lot. Well, it is one enormous step, isn't it? But how did you get on after spending 24 hours, 7 days a week in each other's pockets? Did you see another side to your other half? 08453 009956. With me now is TV psychologist and relationship coach. It's Joe Hemmings. Afternoon, Joe.
Afternoon, Ian.
Is there ever a kind of perfect time to take the plunge and move in together?
Was ever a perfect time? I think there's three things that go on when you move in with someone. One is the kind of habits that you know they've got, the bad ones, but because you're in that sort of lovely lust-filled stage, you've overlooked them. second are the habits that you don't know about that are a bit of a wake-up call and can be quite shocking. And thirdly is the whole personal thing, you know, the hygiene, the lewd door, as you say, the kind of not being seen without any makeup for the girls, etc., etc. So you've got those three things going on. So unless you kind of talk about them and say, what's it going to be like? If you're going into it naively with blinkers on, I think you're in for a big shock.
But no one's ever that practical, Joe. You mentioned the lust phase, and through the mists of time, I can vaguely remember that. You are blind to the imperfections, and you do think that by moving in together, everything's going to be fantastic, and it'll be exactly the same as if you were seeing each other three nights a week.
Of course, and then what happens is, because some people, you either have big rows about it, or the people that don't want to rock the boat take over, 95% of the chores. Because that is the only way to sustain the kind of the way of life that they prefer. So in a way, yeah, people don't talk about it. I think, and I'm surprised they don't. I think they should. I think if they shared with their friends their experiences, or even people ringing into you and telling you theirs, the best thing would be to say, okay, let's just deal with this. The stuff that we haven't kind of talked about in our relationship as yet, because it had no need to.
I'm assuming you have at some point, if not now, lived with somebody. What kind of weird things did you notice about your partner when you moved in?
You mentioned the old pants on the floor thing.
Yeah,
the floor drobe at one point. So I went through various phases of thinking, right, I'll pick that up and tidy it up and put it in the dirty linen bin or whatever, or hang the trousers up.
Yeah.
Then I decided I'm absolutely not going to do that. But then I couldn't see the carpet after a while, so that didn't make any difference.
What's your problem with that, Joe? That sounds perfectly natural to me.
I think that was pretty much his response. What is your problem with that? And I've got two teenage boys, so I know, more than most what it's like to have somebody living in your home that doesn't pay much
attention. It does sound like a trivial thing, pants on the floor and stuff, but it's the small things, I think, that are going to scupper relationships. It's the small things that build up into resentments. How do you tackle them?
I think you tackle them before they get resentful. I mean, the classic one is supposedly the old loose seat up and loose seat down.
Yeah.
Stuff. But I think that to me is just like, forget it, move on, there are other things, it happens. But I think when things start to niggle you, then you've got to talk about them before they build into resentment, because a lot of people then don't talk about the things that are actually annoying them. What they sort of get into other rows because they're just sort of irritated with them for that reason, but it ends up coming out as a row about something else, so it's not healthy to store up that resentment, really.
I've thought about this a lot, and I really think the perfect setup is Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton. They are a married couple, or at least they live as a married couple, except they live in separate houses. They live next door to each other. That's got to be the dream situation, hasn't it, Joe?
Well, I think it is. It's the dream team, if you can afford to do it.
You pop next door when you want some supper and
a little bit of bunky. One has got a flat that they can lean out the back of their sort of balcony window and see the back garden of the other person's house.
Perfect.
Great. But, you've got to be able to afford to have two places, and a lot of people move in together partly because, finance would kind of indicate they should rather than anything else. So, I think that would be, having your own space is kind of important when you live together, and it's one of the most difficult things.
Is there a danger of couples moving in together too early and therefore ending what could have been a long-term relationship?
I think one of the real dangerous things about moving in together too early, if you're not doing it for absolutely the right reasons, or perhaps even if you are, is that kind of, because statistics show that, or studies have shown that people who slide into marriage, okay, they're living together and then kind of it's the next stage that's expected of them rather than a decision they've taken, they've got a much higher divorce rate.
Right.
So in that sense, it can be quite dangerous. And also, people don't discuss the same goals. I mean, if you're living together, you don't have the, are we going to have children and how many and when, or, what do you aim for in your lifestyle kind of conversation that people have when they get married. So that often resentment builds up because you haven't discussed the things you might have discussed should you have, got wed.
It's better than it was, though, isn't it? I remember back in my parents' day, it was living in sin. It was frowned upon. You didn't live together until you got married, and generally then you moved into the in-laws' house, didn't you?
Well, yeah, that's right, and you certainly didn't live together until you got wed, and, there were all sorts of things you didn't do before you got married back in the day, life has moved on, I suppose, a long way, and I think for a lot of people, they don't, the thought of living with their in-laws or their own parents would be quite awful unless they had to do it financially. So sometimes moving in together you know, and only paying one lot of rent, whatever it is kind of the only option to really stay together and have somewhere where you can be alone, because that's important to people these days. It was sort of less so years ago, because we take it for granted now.
Joe, I appreciate your time. That's Jo Hemming. She is a TV psychologist, relationship coach. You can check her out on Twitter, at TV Psychologist. Over to you, dear listener. I want your stories. Can I tell this on the radio? Yes, I think I can just. When I lived on my own for a while before my now wife moved in with me. And you don't realise that you've perhaps picked up... I'm regretting starting this already. You don't realise that you've picked up perhaps odd habits living on your own. And when my wife moved in with me, she... the only way I could go to the bathroom was if she had the TV on really loud, the living room door was shut and the bathroom door was shut. The tap was on. That was the only way I could do it. That is odd, isn't it? And after a couple of months, she went, look, you know, I go to the toilet as well. And it's really weird that you have the TV on and the door shut and the tap's running. Very odd. That was nearly a deal breaker. Over to you, dear listener. 08453 009956. I want to hear your stories about what happened when you moved in with your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. What was it? What little niggly things did you spot about them that perhaps you hadn't spotted before? I've got a friend, his girlfriend moved in with him. And when she moved in, she saw that he'd put all of his CDs in alphabetical order and she laughed. A week later, she was out. 08453 009956. Ian Lee, BBC WM. 08453 009956 is the telephone number if you want to give me a call. I'm really keen this afternoon to hear your stories about when you moved in with your partner. Was it a nightmare? It can be. You can be totally in love, in lust with someone. But when you move in, all those things that just really get on your nerves. 08453 009956. But on to something slightly more serious. Hearing earlier on in the show about road safety, and this next story. When I was told this story, I could not believe there are people out there who would do something like this. Terrible story that you've probably heard about. Charlie Jukes tragically killed on Sunday after being struck by a vehicle on Bosworth Road in Chelmsley Wood. Well, as Charlie was being cradled by his cousin just after the tragic incident, his cousin's car, which was obviously left unattended, was approached by thieves who popped in and nicked the sat-nav. I'm speechless. The 21-year-old rushed to the aid of Charlie, but sadly the 8-year-old boy from Selly Oak couldn't be saved and died in hospital the next day. Well, police are now asking anyone who witnessed the theft to contact officers and help them to catch... Well, it's just scum, isn't it? Let's speak to the police officer in charge of hunting for this thief. It's PC Chris Burke. Good afternoon, Chris.
Hello, Ian.
Chris, first of all, for those people who may have missed the story, let's get the bigger picture. What happened to Charlie?
A very tragic set of circumstances. Just before 4 o'clock on Sunday, Sunday just gone, the 8-year-old boy, Charlie Jukes, unfortunately was involved in a road traffic collision whereby he was hit by a vehicle and his cousin attended. It was Bosworth Drive near the Asda, for those who know it locally, in Chelmsley Wood. He was struck by a vehicle and... His 21-year-old cousin came to his aid and parked up and tried to help him and cradle him at the time.
How are Charlie's family doing?
Obviously devastated, as are the local community. Obviously upset by what's happened and disgusted by the theft that's occurred.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, this is just... two really sad stories today. A terribly, terribly sad story. But then just made all the worse by this opportunist scum. So what exactly happened to Charlie's cousin's car?
Well, understandably, Charlie's cousin went to the aid of Charlie, left her vehicle insecure, parked at the Asda car park. It's a red Vauxhall Corsa for anybody who saw it. The vehicle was left insecure. The offender, the thief or thieves, has entered the vehicle and taken the sat-nav from the dashboard and made good their escape from the area.
Well done, guys. Well done. I hope you're feeling proud of yourselves for doing that. Do we know anything, Chris? Have we got any leads or clues?
There's with it being a huge supermarket, there is CCTV, and that's being trawled as we speak.
Okay.
It's happened around 4:30. It was a Red Vauxhall Corsa, and we're urging anybody who's seen anyone acting suspicious around that time, or has even been offered a sat nav, it's a Mio, or Mio rather, M-I-O sat nav, if anyone's been offered it, or anyone who's even bought it, to come forward. Tell us what they know.
This happened on Sunday, didn't they?
That's right.
How can people get in touch? What's the best way for them to contact you?
Okay. If they call either from their landline, it's 101, and then it's an 8-digit extension number of 7921-6006, or call Crime Stoppers on 0800-555-111.
Chris, does anything surprise you anymore?
I didn't think so up until I received this report on Sunday. I didn't think anything would, but it's clearly somebody taking advantage of a very tragic set of circumstances.
Chris, thank you very much indeed. That's PC Chris Burt, and dearie me. I do generally like to think that we are pretty decent as a race. I think we're erring on the side of pretty decent. Some people are amazing. Most people are pretty decent, I think. But then it is weighed out, isn't it, by idiots like that who would go and do something like that. I hope you're feeling proud of yourself. 08453 009956 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Before the end of the show, we will try and do our best to find this lottery winner. Someone's won a stack load of cash. They just don't know it. You've got to claim it today. If they don't claim it, do I get any of it? No? Disappointing.
I'm coming back home.
Dear, if you insist. I'm locking the door if you're not in by 11. Right, Carol's in West Bromwich. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Carol. What can I do for you?
Well, can I just say, that person who stole that sat-nav, I think what an absolute low life is. And I hope that sat-nav takes him into the ditch if he happens to use it for his car.
Well, there you go, yes. Stories like that, it really does... It leaves an unpleasant taste, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Are you a cyclist, Carol?
Yes, I use my bike 3 days a week. I cycle from Lowdell to West Brom.
Do you feel safe on it?
In the morning, it's not too bad. 5:30, it's not too bad. But when I'm coming back home, because I've got to go back onto Sarah Road, it's absolutely busy. And right. I am actually scared. Well, I've got a fluorescent backpack, fluorescent coat, fluorescent gloves, and I've got 3 lights at the back and 2 at the front, and they're still really close to me, and I've been clipped twice.
Oh, really?
So I'm now refusing to use the road.
Do you follow the rules of the road, Carol? Do you stop at traffic lights? Because there are some naughty cyclists. There are some naughty cyclists who don't, Carol.
No, I don't cycle fast. I'm probably going about 10 miles an hour.
Right.
I mean, in the morning, I don't have any problem because I leave at 5:30.
Yeah.
But in the evening, Soho Road at 4:00, past the Albion Ground, is absolutely something else. You wouldn't do it yourself if you see how close they come to you.
I'm
actually cycling on yellow line.
I am not a fan. I am not a fan of cycling at all. A, because I'm not very fit, and B, because I think it's just so dangerous to do it.
I tell you what I do as well. If I do hear a lorry coming up behind me, I try to pedal a little bit faster, and I'll just bump up on the curb.
In your humble opinion, Carol, who are the worst, cyclists or lorry drivers?
Lorry drivers.
Carol, thank you very much indeed. 08453 009956. Carol, they're pointing the finger of blame firmly at lorry drivers. Do you agree? Cyclists versus lorry drivers. Who really are the worst on the roads? 08453 009956.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. BBC WM 95.6.
Okay, if you want to give me a call and talk to me, you've only got 28 minutes or thenceabouts. 08453 009956. How much are you spending on your kids at Christmas? Ever been caught out by a scam? Don't be embarrassed if you have. Come and tell me what it was, and tell others so that they're warned by it. Cyclists versus lorry drivers. Who does pose the biggest threat on the roads? And also, have you won 12 million quid? 08453 009956, 81333. Start your text WM, or send me an email, ian, IAIN.LEE at bbc.co.uk. uk. Right, last 20 minutes or so of the show before Paul Franks at 4 o'clock. 08453 009956 is the telephone number if you want to give me a call. I think I'm being presented with a cup of tea. This is marvellous. Oh, I'll come back. Thank you very much indeed. That's going to make the last 20 minutes easier for me. Probably a bit easier for you as well. On the subject of cyclists, Robert's in West Bromwich. Afternoon, Robert.
Afternoon. I'm saying, don't think too much, but I had an accident in 69 with a driver who only got one eye. And, of course, I had a court case, cost me £250. But the worst part is, nothing's been done since, you know, with cyclists. I mean, when you had a bike, you had to go on the road with a bell or an horn. Well, what it is I'm complaining about, cyclists in West Brom, it's them riding on footpaths. They're not a care in the world. They've got lights on. They've got no bells or anything. And I've seen a few people nearly run down on footpaths. Not one myself with my dog and all sometimes. They just come up behind you. They couldn't care less. If they can't go on the off roads, as the old Black Country say, they should go on transport and get the buses out a bit earlier.
Yes. Robert, can you do me a favour? Have you got the radio on in the background?
No, it's the television. I'll turn it down
a
bit. Hang on.
Hang on a minute. What are you watching on the telly?
David Dickinson.
What? Hang on. Robert, why are you listening to BBC WM and watching the David Dickinson?
Well, I was listening to the radio, but I've turned it off and I'm watching the telly and I've got you on the mobile.
Okay, well, that I'm glad for that. He's good, that David Dickinson, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's good.
I'd love to go to his show, you know, but you've got to have a computer and all this, like, which is another thing. Everybody can't afford these things. But going back to when I had my cycle...
Yes.
Hang on. When I had my cycle accident...
Yes, back in 69.
The driver come up, you know, on the road, and I've just come back to the fish shop with dinners for the people, but I was unconscious for 4 days, and they gave me 50-50. And that was in 69.
Yes.
And I'm now coming up to 63 next Thursday, so I can see... I've had a good life.
Yeah, well, it feels like I've lived your life with you. So this happened in 1969. Did you say the driver of the car only had one eye?
Yes, he caught me with a blind eye, as he said. Because, you know, in the old days, you've got to have 45 degrees from your left finger and you're right without turning your head.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've got, you know, I mean, I had a fractured skull.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people thought I wouldn't live, but... I even put a hole in the road. They said that's coming tarmac. It's out. Yes. Just shows they made good schools. But the only thing is,
yes.
As I say, I wouldn't touch a bike. Now, people have said to me, you ought to have a bike. I said, no.
Yeah.
I'm scared stiff of them.
Yeah.
But I say, all saints way, you've got people coming up about 6 o'clock in the morning and that recycles. They've got lighter and they're not a care in the world. And you get some idiots, as they've heard them say before, going across on the red lights.
Yes. Yes. You're right, and what you're right, Robert, is you don't see many cyclists who've got a horn.
No.
Or have got a bike, have got a bell. You need more cyclists with a horn and a bell, don't you?
Yeah, and what it is, since they've got some of these road lanes, cycle lanes, they're not all on the footpaths, and some footpaths are a bit narrower than that.
Should we just ban one-eyed drivers?
Well, no, because if you remember, on the Central TV, about 5 years ago, they were teaching blind drivers to drive.
Sorry, they were doing what?
On the television, they were teaching blind drivers to drive.
Why would you teach a blind driver to... Why would we have a blind driver?
You know Dave from West Bromwich, blind Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's been on a train, and I think he's had Aidan Goldberg on with him.
On a train?
I think... It was for charity, but of course...
I think blind people are allowed on trains. I'm not sure I'd particularly want them to be driving cars. Robert, we're going slightly off on a tangent there, but thank you very much indeed. Robert there was knocked down in 1969 on the way from a tea rooms by a one-eyed driver. They gave him 50-50. He's 63 now. He's had a good life. But, it just goes to show, doesn't it? You can never be too careful. 08453 009956. Andy's in Hales Owing. Afternoon, Andy.
Hello there, Ian.
Beat that. Go on.
Hello, mate.
Yes.
Well, I do apologise. It's a delayed phone call, really, regarding the lorry driver who rang up, saying that he thought it was a cyclist's fault.
Then we had a lorry driver. It was about 50 minutes ago who said that he thought the majority of accidents were because of cyclists because they jump lights, they don't wear fluorescent clothing, and lorry drivers struggle to see them.
Well, I thought it was embaptised, him ringing up to say that, you know, when the lady was talking about, you know, a daughter who was killed by that lorry driver.
I know what you mean, Andy. I do know exactly what you mean. And we did hear a very, very passionate story about a lady who lost her young daughter. I was kind of hoping, Andy.
I'm 70 now. I've been on the road 55 years.
Andy, if I may just interrupt, I think we hoped that we'd put a semicolon in between those two things. So we didn't mean it to appear distasteful, but if it did, then we, of course, apologise.
Oh, no. You don't have to apologise. No, I just thought it was nice embaptised. The lorry driver, ringing up at that
particular
time.
Who do you think, that story to one side of the young girl that lost her life, who do you think are the worst drivers, the lorry drivers or cyclists?
Well, as I say, I've been, obviously I'm retired now, but I was on the tanker for 40 years, been driving 55 years, so yes. There's fault on both sides. I mean, in them days, I think we was a little bit more professional. These days, when you've got younger drivers driving lorries, I mean, but I have to say at the same time, Ian,
yes.
that I think the employers of some of these HGV drivers are at fault as well, ringing them up every 5 minutes, asking them where they are, and God knows what. You know, the company's waiting for this, and I'm waiting for that. You know, they go on about stress. I do think, I mean, fortunately, I've come up the easy way on the tankers, on the acid, then onto the petrol. But these HGV lads, in them days, you know, when they got a rope and sheet in all sorts of weather, and God knows what. I mean, fortunately, I haven't come across a great deal of cyclists, but you do get when I'm riding down the road, two abreast talking, and
two abreast thing, I mean, that really annoys me.
I do honestly think that these accidents can happen.
Andy, thank you very much. The two abreast cyclists. Now you're talking. That gets right on my wick. I thought it was illegal to ride two abreast, but you'll see them riding along, and it takes ages to overtake. And then when you do, and I don't know, maybe beep them and make a hand gesture to them, they get really offended. It's a wave. It's just a wave. They get really offended by it. Oh, no. Andy, thank you very much indeed. 08453 009956 is the telephone number. 81333. Start your text WM. In a second, we'll be finding out whether you've won £12 million. Now, somebody listening to this, you've probably heard this story on BBC WM 95.6 already, but it's a corker. Somebody listening to this right now could be worth £12 million. £12 million. Oh, flipping heck. Imagine what you could do with that. I have got a friend, I say friend, I met someone once. It was Duncan Bannatyne, before he got divorced, so when he still had money, okay. Say, friend, I've got his phone number, okay, and I used to text him, he used to reply. And I once genuinely said to him, pay off my mortgage, you won't notice. You would not notice that you had paid off my mortgage. It would be like loose change down the back of the sofa. Oh, I'm not doing that, Ian. I'm not going to do that. Doesn't speak quite like that. Obviously, he speaks in a Duncan Bannatyne voice. Wouldn't it be great? £12 million. Oh, I'd love it. Well, Willy Wonka style, the hunt is on for the golden ticket. The clock is ticking. Have you checked your wallets, your purses, under the sofa, in your jacket pocket for that missing Euro Millions raffle ticket worth £1 million a month for a year? Now, what we do know is the ticket was bought in the Ladywood area and still nobody has come forward to claim their prize. Quick question, two questions. What would you do with £12 million? And if the money isn't claimed, what do you think should happen to it? 08453 009956. Thing is, 11 p.m. tonight, the hunt stops. Camelot stop looking and the money goes to charity. Oh, I mean, that's great and stuff, but really? We can chat now to Maureen Mason, who's from Ladywood, the high urban growth economies, who focuses on supporting the Ladywood constituency. You, Maureen, would like the money to stay in Ladywood, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course, most definite. I mean, where it's fair, if they could find the winning ticket holder, then it, of course, first and foremost, it should go there. But then if they do not find that ticket holder, then that money should be reinvested back into Ladywood to help the local community out of economic deprivation.
What kind of stuff could that money do for the community there?
Well, it could help to break down the unemployment barriers. For example, what the government could, what Camelot could consider is setting up a emergency grant aid for those who are at risk of losing their homes due to the bedroom tax. For example, they could also consider creating an economic trust fund for individuals and micro businesses that are able to develop businesses that can create jobs. So there's many things it could do in terms of economic development, creating an economic trust fund, because for local people of the Ladywood constituency, it is very hard for them to access grants and funding to grow their businesses. Now, the best people to take the constituency out of economic deprivation or the local inner developing businesses that are all actually established, or they may have a great idea to set up a business that can create jobs. And that's really what should be happening, is that that 80 million should most definitely be reinvested back into the Ladywood constituency.
For those people listening, Maureen, who don't know Ladywood, tell us what it's like. It's struggling a bit, isn't it?
Yes, well, Ladywood constituency, because there's Ladywood and Ladywood constituency. The constituency is made up of four wards. So you've got Ladywood, you've got Neechells, you've got Aston, and you've got Soho. In Ladywood constituency, you have the most, I think it's over 52.8% of people are unemployed, economically active, but are unemployed. So, but they're looking for work and cannot find work. And it doesn't matter how much people look for work. Even though there's jobs out there to be gotten, there's not enough jobs to go around to give everyone a job, even if everybody was skilled enough and qualified for work. So therefore, if the Camelot could reinvest that 18 million or 12 million, I'm not sure what the amount is.
What's 6 million amongst friends, huh?
What, 6 million? 6 million is a lot when it comes to okay, if they was to develop, let's say, an economic trust fund that enables local unemployed, economically active people to be able to go to that trust fund with a great business growth strategy that can create, let's say, 10 jobs within the next 3 years per person, 6 million can go a long way into helping local grassroots people out of poverty. We have to start somewhere, and I think one of the great things that keeps being missed, because Ladywood constituency, it's not just now it's in its economic deprivation, it has always been the worst deprived area out of Birmingham for decades, for many years to come. So this should be showing everyone that we need a new strategy, and that new strategy must come from the voices of the community.
Oh, we've lost her. Maureen, we'll try and get you back. Very passionate about what... Maureen, are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
We lost you for a second there, Maureen. Oh. I do apologise. No, we've got you. Maureen, if you personally won 12 million quid, what would you do with it?
If I personally won 12 million pounds, number one, I would make sure that I would set up, as I've suggested, an economic trust fund, okay, that can support local people and residents who find it hard to access grants and funding, maybe because they're postcoded in the Ladywood area. I would make sure that they can access this money to grow their business so they can contribute to creating jobs for their community. That's number one.
Maureen, you'd buy a load of nice cars and a big house in the country, wouldn't you?
Well, that would come at the end part. Once I've helped my community, then afterwards, then maybe.
Maureen, stay there. Tony's in Sutton. Tony's called in. Tony, what would you like to say about this?
Well, I just say to the lady who's talking about Ladywood, I'm very laudable what she says, but if anybody in Ladywood won 12 million quid, they wouldn't be living in Ladywood in 6 months' time, with the greatest respect. They'd be out of there, which I think is understandable. But I tell you what I'd do with the 12 million quid. It'd be such fun. You could set up a business to lend money to people that can't get money from anywhere else, and take entirely out these payday loan sharks, which are just glorified loan sharks. You would only loan to people that were recommended by people. So you'd get this network of people saying, you can trust John, you can trust Sally. and it would be at minimal rates of interest, you know, nothing stupid, to really help people and get money into deprived areas and help people just to help themselves. It'd be brilliant. 12 million quid, you could change, you could transform the whole of Ladywood.
Very noble ideas. Maureen, just quickly going back to the first point Tony made there, that if anyone want 12 million quid, they'd be out of Ladywood like a shot.
Well, I think that very much depends on the person and where their background is from. Now, in respect to what the gentleman has just said, I can understand from his perspective. But for me, I wouldn't be flying out of Ladywood in a shot.
Most people wouldn't they?
At the end of the day, first and foremost, we need to help our communities. And what the man has just suggested...
We'll move to a wealthier community.
It's very similar to what I've said. Develop an economic trust fund. From that economic trust fund, you can do loans, you can do grants, but not to be done on the same way like the loan sharks and the financial givers that do, that actually enable people to go more into poverty. Everybody's got different views. That gentleman, there's many people I know was maybe in business who were still living within Ladywood constituency and within the most deprived areas. And sometimes it's mindsets, with all due respect to that person, he is coming from his experience. But me working within the Ladywood constituency for the last 20 years, working at a very grassroots level, sometimes we don't need... loans and with minor interest rates. What about thinking about giving some donations and grants that will enable an individual or a small business to set their business up so they can create jobs that will then also contribute to economic growth and development?
Maureen, we have to end it there. Maureen, thank you very much. Tony, thank you very much indeed. Very noble. But, if you lived in Ladywood, if you lived pretty much anywhere and you're an average person... and you win 12 million quid, you're going to move, aren't you? A, because you can afford to move somewhere else, and B, because all of your neighbours will know you've won 12 million quid. And life would become a nightmare, wouldn't it? Listen, we've got about... Oh, look at the time. We've got 8 minutes of the show left. 08453 009956. If you want to give me a call, now is an excellent time. We've got a couple of lines free. I'll speak to you after this. Oh, dear. I've offended a cyclist. I always seem to. I don't mean to. I said it was illegal for cyclists to ride two abreast. I hate it. There are drivers, car drivers, lorry drivers, bus drivers, cyclists. They've all got bad habits. The worst one for me, cyclists riding two abreast. Hate it. Well, Graham Hankins has emailed him. It is not in capital letters. It is not illegal for cyclists to ride two abreast. Cyclists are advised to ride single file on narrow or busy roads. He's used a semicolon in that email. That's proper. It's not illegal, Graham. It should be. It's the most ridiculous thing. Why would you... Listen, if you want to have a chat with someone, get in a car with them, get on the bus, ride a tandem. Don't ride side by side having a chat. It's ridiculous. How can people even speak when they're cycling as well? I can barely speak when I'm walking. I'm so out of puff. Claire is on the line. Claire, have you called in about Christmas?
Yes.
What would you like to say, Claire?
I think it's absolutely ridiculous the amount of money people are spending on children.
Well, kids' wish lists are about 900 quid, and parents on average are spending, I think, about £207 per child at Christmas.
Bonkers.
Why?
Absolutely bonkers. I mean, we've got three children. If I tried to spend that much... Bearing in mind, one was a gatecrasher, because we had identical twins.
Oh, gatecrasher, I like that term. That's nice. I'll be using that.
She's either the gatecrasher or the spare parts.
Right.
Depending on what she's been doing. But there's no way I could afford to pay £600 out on three children. No way.
You wouldn't be tempted to get a little cheeky payday loan or something like that?
No, not a million years.
So how old are your kids?
The eldest is 5, and the two youngest ones are 2 each.
Well, you get off lightly for the next couple of years, but I would say about 4 or 5 years when they start becoming more aware. It's going to be hard to cut corners with them, isn't it?
Nope, still not happening.
You say that now, Claire. You still sound young and fit. When they've worn you ragged in a few years' time...
Nope. Oh, I like that. You sound young. That's nice. You can keep with that.
Well, you do. But you won't in 5 years' time. With the greatest respect, you'll sound like a dried-out old husk.
No, I won't.
You sure?
There's no way.
Okay.
That my absolute limit with them is around about the £100 each. I think that buys you either one decent toy... or a good sack of little toys or little presents.
Claire, thank you very much. And give them a tangerine and a bag of nuts. That's what they deserve. Right, well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you very much for that. Let's get the latest travel news now, shall we? Let's go to Vicky Granger.